from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today, I'll get a preview of the Indianapolis School of Ballet's Nutcracker.
I'll chat with Indiana poet laureate Norbert Kropp.
And I'll find out what the animals do for Christmas at the zoo. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Indianapolis School of Ballet offers much more than just ballet classes. They also put on some great performances. Travis DiNicola chatted with Victoria Liris, the ISB's artistic director, and Kathleen Strauss, their director of communications and development, about the school and their upcoming production of The Nutcracker.
Well, we are about to talk about Nutcracker, of course, but before we jump into that, just remind our listeners about the Indianapolis School of Ballet, exactly what it is that you offer and how you function, and how you're maybe a little bit different from some of the other different ballet companies in town.
Absolutely. We opened our school in August of 2006. We're well into our fourth year, and our school is definitely in the American tradition of ballet. It's Balanchine-based, the technique. And we offer three different programs, one for the young children, which is ages 4 to 7, then our pre-professional track, which is ages 8 through high school, 18, mm-hmm. 19 years of age, and that's for the seriously minded student who wishes to pursue it as a career. And then our open dance program, which is for teens and adults who simply love the joy of dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a great following there.
And you also have a great studio space.
Yes,
really
we do.
Really beautiful studios right downtown.
Yes, we do. We are located at 502 North Capitol Avenue with magnificent views of the state capitol, huge state-of-the-art studios.
Very yeah, nice. Beautiful views, and it's a commitment that we've made to stay downtown and contribute to cultural life down here.
That's really a great thing. You've actually got, what, like three studios down there, is that right?
Yes, we do. We have three studios.
Yeah, that's fantastic that you have that much space both for classes and for rehearsals. Now, you normally actually perform at Scottish Rite Cathedral. That's sort of your home.
Yes, we have. That is our resident home, it seems like.
And you do a couple performances throughout the year that gives the kids who are your students an opportunity to perform. Of course, you always do Nutcracker, but tell me about just briefly some of the other work that you do throughout the year.
In May, we have our spring production, and last year, as you very well know, since you were the mayor of our wonderful...
Full disclosure here, right?
our wonderful production of the full-length Coppelia. We did Coppelia last May, and the previous year we did Act Two of Swan Lake, mm-hmm. and various repertoire.
Now, when you do pieces like that, again, it's primarily the students who perform it, but you do bring in some other dancers and performers every now and then to sort of supplement it.
Absolutely. We generally bring Paul Vitale in, who is a wonderful, wonderful actor. Mm-hmm. At this point of his life, he was my dancing partner in Pennsylvania Ballet. We met many, many years ago, and we danced together in numerous ballets. Mm-hmm. But he comes now, and he is our Drosselmeyer. He plays the role of Drosselmeyer Nutcracker. And for Coppelia, he was Dr. Coppelius, mm-hmm. the lovable but eccentric magician and doll maker.
Well, and I can say, Victoria, that I want to be very, very clear about something here, and that is that even though the majority of the dancers are students in your productions, mm-hmm. You treat them as if they are a professional company.
And absolutely.
They rehearse hard, and they perform well, and they give an incredible professional performance.
Thank you. I'm in the business of training dancers.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
this is what they wish to do. They're looking fourth career in this profession.
And really, the I mean, last year with Capellia, the two oldest students, the two seniors who were graduating, going off to college, were just two of the most amazing dancers I've ever had a chance to work with.
Oh, thank
well,
you.
Come to see Nutcracker, and you get to see some more.
Let's talk
Absolutely.
About Nutcracker. Yeah. So tell me all about Nutcracker.
Well, this is our third annual production. We are we have three performances, Friday evening, December 18th at 7 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, December 19th and 20th at 3 p.m. And what's unique about our production is that it is an absolutely Indianapolis-based production. Mm-hmm. Our first year, we introduced in our party scene the parlor, the actual parlor of the Morris Butler House. So that was a wonderful collaboration for mm-hmm. us with the Historic Landmarks Foundation. And this year, we are adding a street scene backdrop. So when the curtain goes up right after the overture, we are actually seeing the facade of the Morris Butler House, Park Avenue.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so it's very exciting. So and once again,
with Indianapolis dancers and set in Indianapolis.
Totally. This is indigenous to this community. And once again, David Higgins, who's the amazing scenic designer for Indiana University, has, I just picked it up. I just got it. Beautiful backdrop. This is the second one he's done for us.
Great. Now, tell me about some of the leads who are dancing in it this year.
Well, I am so excited about this year's production because we have not one but two sugar plums this year, both locally grown girls. And one is a graduate of our school, Kristen Young, who is now a junior at University of Oklahoma. She's coming back to dance Sugar Plum. And also our lovely Michelle Meltzer, who is a senior at North Central High School. And last year she was featured as Snow Queen, which she is doing again this year because she's just lovely in it. But she will also be making her debut as the Sugar Plum Fairy.
Oh, great.
And both of those ladies are partnered by the very handsome and charismatic Timothy June, who's a dancer with Dance Kaleidoscope.
Great. So you can, again, bringing in a professional too, which is also a great experience for the kids.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like a side-by-side situation.
As you said, it is a student production, but it is a professionally run production between the scenery, the costumes, the lighting, the choreography.
And just to be clear, you know, with a lot of productions with kids, no matter how talented they are, it's sort of like, well, you know, if you're not a parent, it's kind of sometimes painful to go. That's not the case at all. I mean, you don't have to be a parent of any of these kids to appreciate the show.
This is really, truly charming theater. It is.
Yes.
It is engrossing and engaging, and you really feel the moments. It's not about the relationship that you have with anybody on stage. It's the theater experience itself.
You are transported, basically, for 2 hours.
And it's such a great space, too, over at Scottish Rite to see ballet. You know, Vicki, I've been wanting to ask you something. I was reading, there's an article in, I think it's this week's New Yorker, and talking about Nutcracker and a production in New York and about the hand dance and how Nutcracker relies, especially in the Balanchine tradition, on using so much mime and gesture to tell a lot of the story in
Absolutely.
Nutcracker. Tell me, how do you, as a dancer, teacher, work with your students on that? Is it part of class? Is it part of rehearsal? How do you convey how to use their hands as actors and actresses beyond just what they're learning as dancers?
There are specific hand gestures, pantomime, if you will, that will be taught to students, not so much in classroom, although there are moments where in teaching you will.
And these are hand gestures that are, there's actually like a vocabulary.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not quite like a sign language, but it's within the world of dance. You know, certain gestures over the years have come to mean very specific things.
Absolutely. And this has to be done so clearly and methodically that the average audience member will understand what is being said through these gestures.
Even if they've never seen them before.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think you witnessed that in Coppelia because there was such a tremendous amount of pantomime, far more than Nutcracker, certainly. Mm-hmm. But in Nutcracker, you see the magician, Drosselmeyer, and some of Clara's motions referring to the Nutcracker, or if she just wiggles her fingers around her face, creating the whiskers of the Mouse Queen, or she'll refer to the crown of her head, of the crown that the Mouse Queen, mm-hmm. in our production, we have a Mouse Queen, or the way she salutes, referring to the soldiers. So there is specific,
a whole vocabulary.
Vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that is taught usually in rehearsal time while you're preparing a production. Mm-hmm. You will go through the motions, if you will, the pantomime, and the dancer will learn how to execute, how to really have command of these motions. So they are legible to the audience.
They absolutely are. We've gotten letters from kids and people who have come. We do a community outreach performance the night before we do our opening night. And so, in fact, we're doing one this year for 300 people from assisted living centers and domestic abuse shelters and after-school tutorial programs and Boys and Girls Clubs. And so we've gotten letters back in previous years, and the kids talk about, I knew exactly the whole story.
Oh, that's great.
And it's just great to read that in these letters from these kids, that they totally got it.
Excellent. Well, of course, I can't wait for Nutcracker. And again, at Scottish Rite, coming up on Friday the 18th, Saturday the 19th, and Sunday the 20th. Just briefly, can you give us a hint of what's coming next? Or if a parent takes their kid to come see Nutcracker and their son or daughter is like, I want to dance, how do they get involved? Give us a little bit of that.
You can certainly call our offices. The phone number is 317-955-7525, and our business manager, Laurie Schlabach, is great at answering questions for folks who would like to get their children involved in dance programs, or if an adult is absolutely inspired and wants a great workout on a Tuesday and a Thursday evening. It's a terrific way to have the camaraderie of some friends who feel passionately about dance, and
absolutely.
Vicki teaches those classes on many occasions, and so it's wonderful for that.
Our registration is ongoing. It's mm-hmm. open and ongoing. And just as a pointer, several of our adult students are in this production.
Oh, very
so
fun.
So actually, the lady who mm-hmm. does, who portrays the role of Mouse Queen, and it was originally staged for her, is one of my adult students. Now, her daughter happens to be at our school mm-hmm. as well.
That's pretty
but
neat.
She is a diehard. She won't miss class, and she's wonderful. And yeah. And then also many of our adult party parents mm-hmm. are supplemented by ballroom dancers from Riolo. So
and that's a studio that that shares space near you.
At 502 North mm-hmm. Capitol, Riolo is a wonderful ballroom facility run by Marie Riolo, and she actually is Mrs. Stahlbaum. She's the hostess of the whole party scene.
Very good.
And you can find out more information on our website, which has class schedules and video footage, and you can hook up to our YouTube channel and see our promo video that shows classroom situations and performance spots. So it's the website is Indie Ballet, and that's IndyBallet.org.
Travis DiNicola with Victoria Lyris and Kathleen Strauss from the Indianapolis School of Ballet. Their Nutcracker takes place on the weekend of Friday the 18th through the 20th at the Scottish Rite Cathedral. For more information, visit IndieBallet.org, IndieBallet.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Indiana poet laureate Norbert Krop has always been aware of a difference between male and female energies. And he's written a new book in which he tries to integrate the female and the male spirit into one whole human being. It's called Sweet Sister Moon, and Norbert dropped in to tell the Art of the Matter's resident female more about his quest.
Woods Shrine. When my father led me as a boy into the woods beyond the old farmhouse near the top of the hill at the end of the red sandstone lane, I did not know you were waiting, but I sensed a presence in the woods I did not perceive anywhere else. For the first time, I carried a rifle on my shoulder as we hunted squirrels. All my senses entered a new dimension. Eyes, ears detected every range of motion, every nuance of sound. Now I know you were there waiting for an acolyte. Now I know you were preparing me for what would come later. Silently, skillfully, you led me toward your depths. When I tiptoed around the base of one food tree, you backed around another. When I ran my fingertips up and down the smooth bark of a beech, your skin tingled, but you kept your pleasure to yourself. I had not found the capacity to name what I loved, never heard the name that other men gave you, and so I did not know to say, Daphne. When I squinted at the early morning sunlight that sometimes broke through a cluster of leaves, I did not know it was light from your heavenly eyes. Now, when I lie with you as morning light filters through the blinds and you prepare to rise and depart, I recall where I saw that familiar light so long ago and so far away. Goddess of leaf, branch, bole, and bark, your devotee is back. I have returned to the shade of your shrine.
One of the reasons I wanted you to start with this poem is I want to ask you why or how it's appropriate for a man to devote a book of poems to women.
Well, because women are everywhere in my life and have been, and there have been many wonderful women in all kinds of relationships, running from grandmother to mother to sister to daughter to friend to wife. To great women singers and songwriters whose work I love, to great poets like Emily Dickinson. So women have always been very, very important in my world. And why not then write poems about them?
There's a little bit of a sense to me in this particular poem of a boy on the verge of manhood going to do a manly thing.
Yes.
And not to sound as though it's so clear-cut and black and white, but it is a more manly energy to take a rifle into the woods to bring home something for dinner.
Yes. And even in the woods, there's a woman's spirit.
There's a woman's spirit. There's Mother Earth. There's
That's
Diana,
right.
Daphne,
yes.
whatever
right.
you
yeah.
name
that great
spirit.
Nexus. That's
yeah.
right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a poem that, like many of my poems, returns to my childhood and to the origins and to the woods. The woods was very, very important for me. I mean, I used to tell my Long Island students and audiences when I would read that to me, the woods was what the seashore was to them.
Hmm.
So I spent thousands of hours out in the woods and often in fields also. And that was a big part of my growing up and a big part of my initiation. And in a way, this is an initiation poem, yeah.
Absolutely. This book is chock full of beautiful, sensual love songs, love stories. It's also full of a sense of discovery, maybe that not being female, you can put names to some aspects of a female spirit that mm-hmm. it's harder, would be harder to do so if you were a woman.
Well, I like to think so. No, I think that that's true, and I think that it is, at least my sense of it, as I read the poems over and over and putting the book together, even before I put them in a manuscript, that there was that sense of discovery, and that it was a very joyful thing to experience, to see that I did have this many poems about women, and they kept on coming. And they haven't stopped since the book came out, which is good. I mean, I can remember a criticism of a particular contemporary poet whose work I like. I'm not going to mention his name, but some other poet, a male poet, said, you know, he just doesn't write about women. He's got a book of poems, love songs, but that's different. It gets all mythologized in the love song poems, but it isn't ordinary everyday relationships, you know, of women of different, you might say, categories or different interrelationships. And so that I especially appreciated that there are many different kinds of love songs and poems in this book.
Absolutely.
And why can't you have a love song for your grandmother or your mother? Like, Love Song in the Kitchen is one of those. And I deliberately put that in the kitchen because my mother lived in the kitchen and loved the kitchen. She was also a great gardener, and she was a farm girl. But how many love songs that you know ever said in the kitchen? It's always the bedroom or the garden.
Yes, but speaking of the kitchen, I want you to read us Emily Dickinson's Loaves, because less an authority on the relationship between food and love than MFK Fisher said that to share a meal with someone is an act of great intimacy and should not be entered into carelessly.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a very good insight. And this came out of my family and the family of German friends went together to the Emily Dickinson homestead, the house in Amherst, Massachusetts. And I knew from teaching Emily for years and reading about her that her main chore, family chore, was to bake the bread. So we were in the kitchen, and I looked, and there was a stairway. And where did the stairway go? Right up to her bedroom, where she wrote all her poems and kept them in the drawer. And that's the inspiration for this. And our daughter, who was about 9 at the time, was also writing a paper on Emily Dickinson.
I think it was
in the fourth grade, yeah. So, Emily Dickinson's Loaves. In her mother's kitchen, Emily kneaded the dough and shaped it into loaves and let them rise as she tiptoed up the stairs to her bedroom and took out a piece of blank paper, and with flour on fingertips, she scratched out a poem that rose from the depths. When it was finished, she slipped it into a drawer, sneaked back down the stairs, put the loaves into the oven, and let the bread bake as she climbed back up the stairs in a white dress, another poem swelling inside her. When it rose, she traced it in ink on paper and put the sheet on the pile expanding inside the drawer. Sometimes when she wrote, she felt flour on her fingers, and sometimes when she ate a slice of bread, she tasted a tang of poems on her tongue. When Emily died, Sister Lavinia tiptoed into her bedroom, where the chest of drawers glowed in the sun like an oven, and opened the drawers and found loaves of poems baked to perfection, giving off the smell of daredevil courage and indomitable spirit.
I love the concurrent images of the blankness of dough. If you've ever made bread from scratch,
yes, I used to knead it when my wife would make it.
Yeah, it can take any form, and you don't know what that form
will be. It's a very sensual
experience
working with the dough, and I think cooking, as you were implying or suggesting, and eating are very, very sensual experiences and parts of life to be celebrated for sure.
There, you have a poem that celebrates, and again, not to make this sound all black and white or one thing or the other, but there are natural, since eternal ancient times, natural sensibilities about what the male spirit is and what the female spirit is. And I love the poem Preservation for its invocation of how we think about the role of women, roles of women, I should say.
Sure. And preservation is a theme that's deep in my work. I mean, I worked for 25 years preserving pioneer German journals and letters and so on to make them available to the public. But this is a different type of preservation, and it's a poem that was set in our first Long Island house, and it's something that my wife was doing here, preservation. And it's in a kind of stanza form that's three lines, but it sort of is in a weaving, almost alternating pattern, mm-hmm. preservation, tight weave, somebody called it. You sit on the floor in front of the fire and pull the frayed edges of a rose, royal blue, and beige oriental rug onto your lap. The black and white kitten that was thrown from a car into the ivy in front of the house rolls in the folds between you and the fire, rubbing belly and back against birds swaying on stalks of irises in bloom. With needle and thread, you stitch together strips of a woolen rug shredded by a machine, swab light spots with leftover coffee to darken the background. As I poke at the logs flickering on the andirons you rescued from the refuse in front of an antique shop, you rub a finger between the kitten's oversized ears and say, I love to save what other people throw away. You know, as I read that, I was thinking of my favorite poem, which is The Odyssey, the story of going home. And it's the story of Penelope there in the house, mm-hmm. and there are all those suitors, and she's weaving.
Yeah.
And she unweaves at night what she did during the day so that she'll never have to commit herself to any one of them. And there's also the image of somewhere in that of her nightgown, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But this is part of that traditional role, isn't it, that we assign to women.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a very domestic poem, and it's a poem with an animal in it. And that's part
nurturing.
Of the whole configuration and nurturing, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. How did you, and I'm not looking for a conversation you have with your parents about mm-hmm. sexuality here. I'm looking for more of a spiritual zeitgeist or mm-hmm. eureka moment. Do you remember when you first realized that men and women had different sensibilities?
Well, I think probably pretty early on, but I wouldn't have put it that way. I wouldn't have had that vocabulary, but I just sensed different spiritual, and I wouldn't have even said spiritual, but I knew that there were differences, but I didn't see it in the kind of very traditional ironclad kind of way. It was just, oh, there are different ways of seeing and different ways of feeling and different ways of responding to people. And different ways of responding to the earth, too, I think. And I spent a lot of time in farms. But, you know, on those farms, women did a lot of work, too. So it's not that they stayed in the kitchen
sure.
and the men were only in the fields. That's a bit of a stereotype. But I guess that became stronger and stronger the longer I lived. And I don't know if there was a moment of breakthrough, a great epiphany. But I just became more aware of women writers and women and composers. And some of that is fairly recent, you know, because there were great women writers that we didn't know about because they had trouble getting published or their works weren't promoted. There were great singers that I hadn't yet discovered who were women. And later, I mean, there was a breakthrough when I got into the blues in the late 60s as a grad student at the University of Notre Dame. And there was Bessie Smith I discovered then. And there's Ma Rainey in this book, a poem about her that I discovered later. And Billie Holiday, whose work I just absolutely adore. And there were many other singer-songwriters in the book, as you know, because there's a whole section of tributes mm-hmm. to them. Yeah.
Is your muse female?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, that first section of the book is muse poems, but it keeps coming up over and over, I think. I'm trying to think of a poem in which there is a male muse, and I can't think one off the top of my head in this book. I mean, I have many poems that are male poems and about friendships with males, and
sure.
and there was a great mentor I had, a high school teacher, whose influence led me to change from becoming an engineer and an English major and teacher of English instead, and then a writer.
Very different paths.
Yes. But, I mean, that's all part of my world, too. Some of these poems, a few of these poems are from earlier books.
Sure.
But I picked a few of them to fill out the sense of fullness of different kinds of relationships. But I could put together another book of poems about women from my work if I wanted to. I don't want to belabor the point, but many poems have been coming lately that quite a number of them are about females.
Yeah, you mentioned before we turned on the microphone and the computer to record this conversation that you've been receiving a new poem every morning this week.
Yes, it's been going on for close to 2 weeks. There was a period. There was one. I don't make a habit or a rule that I must write a poem every day because that can wear thin. But there's been an influence of William Stafford, a mentor of mine who died in 1993, I think it was. He was from Kansas and taught in Oregon for 35 years. But he would get up every morning and write a poem. And we were out in Oregon and Portland where our daughter lives around, I think, 2005 or 6 was the first visit. And we got to see there's a William Stafford room at the Library of William and Clark College, which is where he taught. And then I got to go to his archives and see all of his files. And he was such a friendly man, and I think he mentored a lot of younger poets. But he would write a poem every morning, and you know, I started reading his poetry again after that trip, and I went 90 mornings in a row writing a poem every morning.
Wow.
Now, I didn't use every one of those poems in books,
sure,
or I'll publish them elsewhere, but That was a wonderful, I mean, it's a great way to live, I'll tell you.
Sharon Gamble with Indiana Poet Laureate Norbert Croft. Sweet Sister Moon is his newest book of poems, and it features stunning original cover art by Ashley Verkamp. Find out more at croftpoetry.com. That's spelled KRAPF poetry.com. Sharon.
Travis.
Have you ever watched the NORAD on the computer, the map of where Santa goes on Christmas?
I have. I love that.
Isn't that the coolest thing?
Great use for technology.
It really is. They have these great people from the U.S. military that track Santa's path over Christmas. I'm really looking forward to that. And there's actually a reason why I mentioned that we're going to talk about on
What Do We Do?
You ready for this one? Here's the connection. Coming up this week, astronaut David Wolf, who is just back from the International Space Station, is going to be chatting live with Mickey Maurer at Mickey's Corner at the JCC. I'm thinking, you know, space and outer space and NORAD.
That.
And, you know, because I'm sure David Wolf probably up in the International Space Station met Santa.
I'm trying to picture what
I'm
Santa's,
sure Mickey Maurer asked him about that.
Like, if he didn't, he'd be or maybe crazy. Not. Well, yeah. Anyways,
but that is taking place Tuesday the 15th, 7 p.m. up at the JCC, where you get to hear Mickey Maurer interview David Wolf.
I love that.
Yeah.
Here's something else off the beaten path. It's a new cantata for Christmas called The Holy Infant. It's based on traditional Polish carols. And if you are not familiar with Polish Christmas carols, you might want to check this out. There's some glorious music that will be incorporated into this piece called The Holy Infant, a cantata for Christmas. And you can hear it on Sunday, December 20th at 9 a.m. at Orchard Park Presbyterian Church, where members of the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra will be performing with the Orchard Park Church Sanctuary Choir and soloists. So very cool. It celebrates the story of the Nativity through arrangements of those traditional Polish folk carols. Again, Sunday, December 20th at 9 at Orchard Park Presbyterian Church. That's 9 a.m.
Very neat. Hey, you know, we always talk about how great it is to buy, you know, tickets to a show or artwork as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a great idea if you're still looking for that last-minute gift. Tickets go on sale this week on the 19th for a Ben Vereen performance. He's going to actually be in Carmel for a fundraiser for the Carmel Community Theater. Now, the performance doesn't actually take place until March 7th, but this is really cool that the Carmel Community Theater has been able to, through some friends of friends, it sounds like, bring in an evening of Ben Vereen, which is a very, very cool thing.
Very fun. Something else going on this holiday season.
We represent the Lollipop Kids. If you know the source of that, then you are the right person to go see. Actually, if you don't know the source of that, you're an even better person to go see The Wizard of Oz at Indianapolis Civic Theater. It's their holiday show this year, and they have performances now through January 3rd, including, are you ready for this, an audience sing-along on Thursday, January 1st at 7 o'clock. So on New Year's Day, New Year's Day in the evening at 7 o'clock, you can go sing along to The Wizard of Oz at Indianapolis Civic Theater.
You know, if you're doing some shopping down at Circle Center Mall, it's always great to pop into the Arts Garden. They have lots of different free concerts and performances going on through the holiday season. One of them I want to mention is actually on Saturday the 12th at 2 p.m. If you're listening to this on Friday night, you can get down there tomorrow afternoon. The Athenaeum Pops Orchestra Holiday Concert is taking place, directed by Dr. Lee Jones. Should be a lot of fun. And if you're listening on Saturday, well, get down there anyway and check out some of the fun concerts at the Arts Garden this season.
Hey, something else you might want to do, speaking of citywide celebrations of the arts, Arts Council of Indianapolis has put together something called 12 Free Days of Christmas, and if you Google 12 Free Days of Christmas Indianapolis, you can find out which venues are open for free during the latter part of this month. For example, on December 20th from 12:30 to 3:30, you can stop by the Benjamin Harrison Home and see their exhibitions all for free.
Free is good. Hey, performance going on Saturday night at the Scottish Rite Cathedral, the annual Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra performing their classical Christmas. Because the reason that they do this at Scottish Rite is the Hilbert is sort of taken over by that other holiday show,
yes.
Which is a lot of fun. But if you're looking for something a little bit more traditional, then their classical Christmas concert this year is going to feature some music by both Haydn and Britten, and it should be a great show, a lovely place to see a concert at the Scottish Rite, and mm-hmm. That is Saturday at 8 p.m.
Very good. You know, as much as it's exciting, all of the hubbub around the Christmas holiday, sometimes people feel a little bit of a letdown after that big day, and so it's good to plan something to cope with that feeling of being let down. Here is the very item. It's a candlelight evening on Delaware Street. This has been going on for several years now, and it's on December 29th from 5:30 to 9:30 in the evening. It's a pre-New Year's Eve evening of progressive historic home tours and dinners. You'll gather where President Harrison hosted his family celebration, sip tea where famous stage and opera legends were entertained, and savor dessert where members of the Vonnegut family once lived, and those are different dwellings. You can find out more by calling 631-1888 or just Google Candlelight Evening on Delaware Street, Indianapolis for more information about that. You will want to get reservations in before that night because they have to cook the food, you know.
There you go. Hey, you know, earlier I talked about the Indiana School Ballet's Nutcracker. There's another ballet Nutcracker that's going on this weekend at the Madam Walker Theater. The Indiana Ballet Company, with its affiliated Russian Ballet Academy of Indiana, is performing their Nutcracker, and that's taking place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday as well.
You can't swing a rat without hitting a Nutcracker. Got in trouble the last time I said you can't swing a cat on the air.
Yeah. And hey, last thing I want to mention is a very Phoenix Xmas 4, Our Stockings Are Stuffed, continues through December 20th. And if you're looking for a little bit non-traditional holiday fun, then this is certainly the show that will lighten your spirits.
And I want to call attention to the IDOTA Members Juried Show, which continues through Christmas Eve at the Domont Studio Gallery at 545 Southeast Street. And remember, local art makes a great gift.
That's right. And we'll have no calendar next week, but we will have our very special holiday music show.
We will.
And then we'll be back in the new year with some more of what we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org.
You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Christmas time, and the living is easy. If you're a seal or a walrus at the zoo, that is. Travis Ninicola chatted with public relations specialist Maura Giles from the Indianapolis Zoo about all the special activities they have for the holiday season and about what the animals are up to this time of year.
The zoo is always such a one of my favorite places to go during the holidays. You guys always have so many cool things going on for kids, for adults, for the animals. What's going on this year?
Well, this year we're having Christmas at the zoo. It's over 40 years we've been doing this, believe it or not.
Wow.
Biggest light event in the city, probably in the state.
Yeah, the lights are so cool.
Oh, they're absolutely beautiful, and we just keep adding more every single year.
Yeah, I remember, was it last year, the year before, you guys switched over a lot to the energy-efficient lights?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
The LEDs.
Yeah.
And we've been doing that for the past year or so. It's mm-hmm. going to be a few more years before they're all LEDs, but
right.
that's the goal because they are a little bit greener, and mm-hmm. you know, our mission is to inspire people for animal conservation and world conservation.
Of course. And so you've got lights all around the zoo. I mean, it's so cool, like, walking around, especially, like, if it's just started snowing a little bit and all the lights are on, and then you can take the train around the zoo and see a lot of the lights that way, too,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And stuff.
And there's lights all over the place, and not only the lights, but, of course, the animals are out.
Right.
We are the zoo. So you can come and see the animals at night, which is a special treat because you don't get to do that year-round.
Yeah.
So the animals are out till about 9 p.m. when we close.
Now, what are some of the animals that actually are more active or prefer being around at night? Or what are some of the, maybe some of the fun things you get to see that you wouldn't see otherwise?
I don't know if you were out last year when we had the big snow.
Mm-mm.
And we had our two Alaskan brown bear cubs,
oh, yeah.
Kiak and Ketnu, and they went wild in it. They were
Did
wrestling
they?
In the snow. They turned their exhibit into like a toboggan, and they just
How
had
cool.
a wild time. And so they're really fun to see.
I mean, they're pretty frisky anyway. But
oh, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
And, of course, the seals and sea lions love it. Walruses are a big feature. I personally don't tell the dolphins.
Okay.
The walruses are my favorite by far.
I don't think the dolphins listen to the show, but just in case. So tons of stuff to do. And of course, Santa's there.
Yes, Santa's there in Santa's Village, presented by Community Health Network. You can visit him, get your picture taken. You can decorate cookies with Mrs. Claus. We also have the Lowe's wishing trees where you can write down your wishes for the year and tie the ribbon onto the tree
mm-hmm.
and kind of watch it fill up throughout the
oh,
month.
Neat.
So it's a really nice time.
Very cool. And then if you want to duck inside, you can also, of course, go over to the conservatory. And you've got a new exhibit this year, Woodland, is that what it's called?
Woodland Wonderland.
Okay.
It's brand new this year, and it's in the conservatory. And I have to say, I had my doubts, but
yeah.
I went and saw it. I had a little sneak peek. And it's absolutely beautiful. There are so many festive holiday plants. They've got, of course, the poinsettias.
Sure.
They have Christmas cactus, rosemary, winterberry, holly, Jerusalem cherry, all these beautiful plants. And they're also going to have the live reindeer who will be in the conservatory this year. Last year they were in Santa's Village.
Oh, wow.
So this year they're going to be in the conservatory in the atmosphere. It's just absolutely awesome. But also in the conservatory, they're going to have a light show set to music. And I've seen the light show, and it's pretty cool.
Now, this is something you want to do when it's dark outside, is that right? Or
yeah, well, yeah. And Christmas at the zoo activities start at 5.
So, yeah, by then
so it'll
it's
be
dark.
Dark.
Anyway.
You
okay.
can come to the zoo at noon. We open at noon, but the activities mm-hmm. don't start until 5 p.m.
Right, the really cool sort of after, you know, the winter type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about some of the animals, I mean, so such a big part of the zoo's grounds are used for the plains and the African exhibit, and of course you got the giraffes and the lions mm-hmm. and the elephants and stuff. What do those guys do during the winter and and at night for something like this? Is that area open or?
Well, those animals, because they're African animals, mm-hmm. they need it to be warm.
Yeah.
And 30 degrees is not warm.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
So they do go inside for the winter.
Okay.
There's a chance you might see them during the winter season if it's above 40 or 45 degrees, but if it's lower than that, they have to be indoors. And, of course, you know, we have plenty of room and heated areas where they stay. The elephants, for example, have heated floors.
Cool.
So they're set up pretty nicely there.
Okay. That's pretty cool. But again, for a lot of the animals, like the bears, of course, and you mentioned the seals and the walruses, just mm-hmm. love winter weather.
Oh, yeah. And if you get cold, you can always go inside because our Oceans building is indoors where you can pet sharks and you can see the underwater viewing of the seals and sea lions. You can go into the deserts, which is definitely warm.
Oh, yeah. That's true, yeah.
And sure. We'll have a holiday dolphin show inside. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Dolphin Dome is indoors. And also indoors in our encounters, biome is Critter Corner. So from 5 to 9, you can actually meet a zookeeper from the Indianapolis Zoo,
mm-hmm.
and they will have an animal that you can get a little closer to than normal.
Very neat.
So it's going to be really cool. And then, you know, you can see some other special things, like we'll have various animal chats going on throughout the evening where you can learn more about our brown bear cubs, for example, or the penguins and the meerkats and some other animals. And all that is on a schedule that you get on your map when you come into the zoo. And also on your map, you'll notice that we have something new this year.
What's up?
It's kind of a contest, really. Hidden. They're not quite hidden. They're in plain sight. But around the zoo grounds, we have put 10 different mistletoe.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can take your map around the zoo, and if you find a couple, you can circle on your map if you want to keep track. But then go to the gift shop and fill out a form, tell them where you saw the mistletoe. You
okay.
don't have to find all 10.
A little scavenger hunt.
Just mm-hmm. find a couple, and then you're entered to win a dolphin in water adventure.
Cool. That's a good deal. And that's where you actually get to, like, hang
get
out
in the water. Yeah. Oh,
get
yeah.
in the water. That's, you know, so win, enter the win that. How very, very fun. You know, of course, a lot of the information about what you guys have going on is on your website and also in your members magazine. You know, I mean, I'm just going to say it for you. Zoo memberships make great holiday gifts.
You know, you must have read my mind because that's exactly what I was thinking. They do. And you know what? I get one for, and I hope she's not listening, but I get one for my mom every year.
Uh-huh. No, that's a great thing to do. Yeah, and of course, you know, it's good all year round, and it lets you, you know, get free parking in the zoo and go to a lot of different events. You know, like I love going to animals and all that jazz, you know, during the summer and checking out, you know, all the different, you know, great jazz artists, indie jazz artists on the Thursday nights. You guys do that. Plus, there's also a lot of other cool events that you do. Your big wine auction's coming up soon, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Elegant Vintage's 12th Annual International Wine Auction. Believe it or not, it's been going on for a little while, and it's coming up March 20th, which is a few months away, but you got to get your tickets now.
Yeah, that's right.
Because you don't want to be left out in the cold, we'll say.
No, and where does that take place?
That takes place at the Conrad Hotel downtown, and it's from 6 p.m. to 12 a.m., and it's just a really fun event where they have rare wines for auction, along with not just wine, but unique gift packages, things from the zoo. And travel packages and jewelry, and they auction off private dinners, and it's really fun. You get to come, sit down, have dinner, have some wine, and just have a really good time.
And I get to see a little preview of that a while back, and there were some amazing wines, you know, a lot of older wines, I mean, you know, 20, 30, 40-year-old wines that were then be up for auction that they were previewing. That's pretty cool stuff. And, of course, you know, all the money from things like that, and also, like, Zubilation, of course,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, great event you guys do, you know, it goes to not just support what you do physically at the zoo in terms of the animals there, but, you know, I've really learned over the past couple of years and have been amazed and impressed by all the work that the Indianapolis Zoo does in conservation
mm-hmm.
that doesn't take place at the zoo.
Right.
Just briefly, tell me a little bit about some of the work that I know you guys are doing in Africa especially.
Oh, yeah. We're doing a lot of things all over. We're part of the Tarangire Elephant Project, and as well as other things. But the one I want to highlight is we're working with Dr. Lori Marker, who is the founder of the Cheetah Conservation Fund. And she's dedicated herself to helping cheetahs and helping prolong their species. And she's working with us for our cheetah exhibit that's going to open next year.
This is a pretty cool thing.
It is a very cool thing.
And would the cheetahs have like a racetrack to run in or something? Is that what I've heard?
Well, we have something called Race a Cheetah.
Uh-huh.
And basically, it's an interactive thing where you can get on and you can sort of run. And it has an LED display. And it tells you how fast you compare to how fast a cheetah is.
Okay. So it's not like, you know, you basically, I was kind of picturing, you know, there's this little start line and you start running and then you guys let the cheetah run after you and see who runs faster. And,
well, we don't do that.
Yeah, no, it's not try to outrun a cheetah.
No, okay. Just race a cheetah.
Not escape the cheetah.
And you can also, on this display, because part of our cheetah, Race for Survival, mm-hmm. our exhibit, is made possible because of the Tony Stewart Foundation. So Tony Stewart's time is also going to be on Race of Cheetahs. So you can see how fast you run compared to Tony Stewart in a car.
Okay, not Tony Stewart running.
But there are going to be so many things that are going to be neat for that exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
And I could talk all day about it if you'd let me. but I can highlight a couple of things. Besides cheetahs, we're going to have other animals. We're going to have bat-eared foxes and hornbills, and Kangal Anatolian Shepherds.
Wow, what's that?
Well, it's a dog.
Okay.
But it's not just an ordinary dog. These dogs protect livestock from free-roaming cheetahs in Africa, and they prevent conflicts with farmers.
Huh.
Lori Marker has been working with farmers in Africa and with these dogs, and she's part of her efforts are raising money to provide these dogs to farmers because a lot of the reasons for the decline in the cheetah population is because they're being killed because they attack livestock.
Mm-hmm.
So if the farmers have these dogs, they'll keep the cheetahs away and the cheetahs can roam happily. And so we're going to have a little bit of education about that.
That's
so people
cool.
can kind of get to know what it's like for cheetahs and what it's like in Africa.
Excellent. Good. Well, and that exhibit opens in May, is it?
Yep. Okay. Memorial Day weekend.
Very good. Mara, it's always a pleasure to hear about what's going on at the zoo this time of year as well as throughout the whole year. And it's great to have you in the studio.
It's always good to be here.
Travis DiNicola with Mara Giles from the Indianapolis Zoo. For more information about all their holiday programs, visit, you guessed it, IndianapolisZoo.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Vaselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra, from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for our special holiday show.
That's right. Matt Soucy will join us for a show that features some of the best of local holiday music.
Oh, and some eggnog and maybe a snowball fight, too. So listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter is made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by grants from the Arts Council of Indianapolis and from the City of Indianapolis, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.